I have nothing to answer on their behalf. Suppose that you take all these hypotheses in turn and see what are the consequences which follow from each of them.
Very good. And first let us assume them to say that nothing is capable of participating in anything else in any respect. In that case, rest and motion cannot participate in being at all.
They cannot.
But would either of them be if not participating in being?
No.
Then by this admission everything is instantly overturned, as well the doctrine of universal motion as of universal rest, and also the doctrine of those who distribute being into immutable and everlasting kinds, for all these add on an ocean of being, some affirming that things are truly in motion, and others, that they are truly at rest.
Just so.
Again, those who would at one time compound, and at another resolve all things, whether making them into one and out of one creating infinity, or dividing them into finite elements, and forming compounds out of these, whether they suppose the processes of creation to be successive or continuous, would be talking nonsense, and all this if there were no admixture.
True.
Most ridiculous of all will the men themselves be who want to carry out the argument, and yet forbid us to call anything, because participating in some affection from another, by the name of that other.
Why so?
Why? Because they are compelled to use the word to be, apart from others, in itself, and 10,000 more, which they cannot give up, but must make the connecting links of discourse, and therefore they do not require to be refuted by others, but their enemy, as the saying is, inhabits the same house with them. They are always carrying about with them an adversary, like the wonderful ventriloquist, Pericles, who out of their own bellies audibly contradicts them.
Precisely so, a very true and exact illustration.
And now, if we suppose that all things have the power of communion with one another, what will follow?
Even I can solve that riddle.
How?
Why, because motion itself would be at rest, and rest again in motion, if they could be attributed to one another.
But this is utterly impossible.
Of course.
Then only the third hypothesis remains.
True.
For, surely, either all things have communion with all, or nothing with any other thing, or some things communicate with some things and others not.
Certainly.
And two out of these three suppositions have been found to be impossible.
Yes.
Everyone, then, who desires to answer truly, will adopt the third and remaining hypothesis of the communion of some with some.
Quite true.
This communion of some with some may be illustrated by the case of letters, for some letters do not fit each other, while others do.
Of course.
And the vowels, especially, are a sort of bond which pervades all the other letters, so that without a vowel one consonant cannot be joined to another.
True.
But does everyone know what letters will unite with what, or is art required in order to do so?
Art is required.
What art?
The art of grammar.
And is not this also true of sounds high and low? Is not he, who has the art to know what sounds mingle, a musician, and he, who is ignorant, not a musician?
Yes.
And we shall find this to be generally true of art, or the absence of art.
Of course.
And as classes are admitted by us in like manner to be some of them capable and others incapable of intermixture, must not he, who would rightly show what kinds will unite, and what will not, proceed by the help of science, in the path of argument, and will he not ask if the connecting links are universal, and so capable of intermixture with all things, and again, in divisions, whether there are not other universal classes, which make them possible?
To be sure he will require science, and, if I am not mistaken, the very greatest of all sciences.
How are we to call it, by Zeus? Have we not lighted unwittingly upon our free and noble science, and in looking for the sophist have we not entertained the philosopher unawares?
What do you mean?
Should we not say that the division according to classes, which neither makes the same other, nor makes other the same, is the business of the dialectical science?
That is what we should say.
Then, surely, he who can divide rightly is able to see clearly one form pervading a scattered multitude, and many different forms contained under one higher form, and again, one form knit together into a single whole, and pervading many such wholes, and many forms, existing only in separation and isolation. This is the knowledge of classes which determines where they can have communion with one another, and where not.
Quite true.
And the art of dialectic would be attributed by you only to the philosopher pure and true.
Who but he can be worthy?
In this region we shall always discover the philosopher. If we look for him, like the sophist, he is not easily discovered, but for a different reason.
For what reason?
Because the sophist runs away into the darkness of not being, in which he has learned by habit to feel about, and cannot be discovered because of the darkness of the place. Is not that true?
It seems to be so.
And the philosopher, always holding converse through reason with the idea of being, is also dark from excess of light. For the souls of the many have no by which can endure the vision of the divine.
Yes, that seems to be quite as true as the other.
Well, the philosopher may hereafter be more fully considered by us, if we are disposed, but the sophist must clearly not be allowed to escape until we have had a good look at him.
Very good.
Since, then, we are agreed that some classes have a communion with one another, and others not, and some have communion with a few and others with many, and that there is no reason why some should not have universal communion with all, let us now pursue the inquiry, as the argument suggests, not in relation to all ideas, lest the multitude of them should confuse us, but let us select a few of those which are reckoned to be the principal ones, and consider their several natures, and their capacity of communion with one another, in order that if we are not able to apprehend with perfect clearness the notions of being and not being, we may at least not fall short in the consideration of them, so far as they come within the scope of the present inquiry, if peradventure we may be allowed to assert the reality of not being, and yet escape unscathed.
We must do so.
The most important of all the genera are those which we were just now mentioning, being and rest and motion.
Yes, by far.
And two of these are, as we affirm, incapable of communion with one another.
Quite incapable.
Whereas being surely has communion with both of them, for both of them are.
Of course.
That makes up three of them.
To be sure.
And each of them is other than the remaining two, but the same with itself.
True.
But then, what is the meaning of these two words, same and other? Are they two new kinds other than the three, and yet are ways of necessity intermingling with them? And are we to have five kinds instead of three? Or when we speak of the same and other, are we unconsciously speaking of one of the three first kinds?
Very likely we are.
But, surely, motion and rest are neither the other nor the same.
How is that?
Whatever we attribute to motion and rest in common cannot be either of them.
Why not?
Because motion would be at rest and rest in motion, for either of them, being predicated of both, will compel the other to change into the opposite of its own nature, because partaking of its opposite.
Quite true.
Yet they surely both partake of the same and of the other.
Yes.
Then we must not assert that motion, any more than rest, is either the same or the other.
No, we must not.
But are we to conceive that being and the same are identical?
Possibly.
But if they are identical, then again in saying that motion and rest have being, we should also be saying that they are the same.
Which surely cannot be.
Then being and the same cannot be one.
Scarcely.
Then we may suppose the same to be a fourth class, which is now to be added to the three others.
Quite true.
And shall we call the other a fifth class, or should we consider being and other to be two names of the same class?
Very likely.
But you would agree, if I am not mistaken, that existences are relative, as well as absolute.
Certainly.
And the other is our ways relative to other.
True.
But this would not be the case unless being and the other entirely differed, for, if the other, like being, were absolute, as well as relative, then there would have been a kind of other which was not other than other, and now we find that what is other must of necessity be what it is its relation to some other.
That is the true state of the case.
Then we must admit the other as the fifth of our selected classes.
Yes.
And the fifth class pervades all classes, for they all differ from one another, not by reason of their own nature, but because they partake of the idea of the other.
Quite true.
Then let us now put the case with reference to each of the five.
How?
First there is motion, which we affirm to be absolutely other than rest. What else can we say?
It is so.
And therefore is not rest.
Certainly not.
And yet is, because partaking of being.
True.
Again, motion is other than the same.
Just so.
And is therefore not the same.
It is not.
Yet, surely, motion is the same, because all things partake of the same.
Very true.
Then we must admit, and not object to say, that motion is the same and is not the same, for we do not apply the term same and not the same, in the same sense, but we call it the same, in relation to itself, because partaking of the same, and not the same, because having communion with the other, it is thereby severed from the same, and has become not that but other, and is therefore rightly spoken of as not the same.
To be sure.
And if absolute motion in any point of view partook of rest, there would be no absurdity in calling motion stationary.
Quite right, that is, on the supposition that some class is mingled with one another, and others not.
That such a communion of kinds is according to nature, we had already proved before we arrived at this part of our discussion.
Certainly.
Let us proceed, then. May we not say that motion is other than the other, having been also proved by us to be other than the same and other than rest?
That is certain.
Then, according to this view, motion is other, and also not other.
True.
What is the next step? Shall we say that motion is other than the three and not other than the fourth? For we agreed that there are five classes about and in the sphere of which we propose to make inquiry.
Surely we cannot admit that the number is less than it appeared to be just now.
Then we may without fear contend that motion is other than being.
Without the least fear.
The plain result is that motion, since it partakes of being, really is, and also is not.
Nothing can be plainer.
Then not being necessarily exists in the case of motion, and of every class, for the nature of the other entering into them all makes each of them other than being, and so non-existent, and therefore of all of them. In like manner, we may truly say that they are not, and again, inasmuch as they partake of being, that they are, and are existent.
So we may assume.
Every class, then, has plurality of being and infinity of not being.
So we must infer.
And being itself may be said to be other than the other kinds.
Certainly.
Then we may infer that being is not, in a respect of as many other things, as there are, for not being these it is itself one, and is not the other things, which are infinite in number.
That is not far from the truth.
And we must not quarrel with this result, since it is of the nature of classes, to have communion with one another, and if anyone denies our present statement viz. That being is not, etc., let him first argue with our former conclusion i.e. respecting the communion of ideas, and then he may proceed to argue with what follows.
Nothing can be fairer.
Let me ask you to consider a further question.
What question?
When we speak of not being, we speak, I suppose, not of something opposed to being, but only different.
What do you mean?
When we speak of something as not great, does the expression seem to you to imply what is little any more than what is equal?
Certainly not.
The negative particles, OY, and me, when prefixed to words, do not imply opposition, but only difference from the words, or more correctly from the things represented by the words, which follow them.
Quite true.
There is another point to be considered, if you do not object.
What is it?
The nature of the other appears to me to be divided into fractions, like knowledge.
How so?
Knowledge, like the other, is one, and yet the various parts of knowledge have each of them their own particular name, and hence there are many arts and kinds of knowledge.
Quite true.
And is not the case the same with the parts of the other, which is also one?
Very likely, but will you tell me how?
There is some part of the other which is opposed to the beautiful.
There is.
Shall we say that this has or has not name?
It has, for whatever we call not beautiful is other than the beautiful, not than something else.
And now tell me another thing.
What?
Is the not beautiful anything but this? An existence parted off from a certain kind of existence, and again from another point of view opposed to an existing something.
True.
Then the not beautiful turns out to be the opposition of being to being.
Very true.
But upon this view, is the beautiful a more real, and the not beautiful a less real existence?
Not at all.
And the not great may be said to exist, equally with the great?
Yes.